Okay. We are still in Perikov. We're still in the Perikov here of the Tiferes Yisrael. And I think we're going to spend today finishing Perikov. We'll try to spend today finishing Perikov. The Yisod, the main issue which he's been dealing with here in Perikov is the Avos and their Kiyum of Torah, and beginning with the premise that Avram Avinu, the Pasuk seems to tell us very, very much, right? It describes Avram Avinu as keeping the whole slew of commandments. Chazal darshan it, he kept everything top to bottom. So, in the Maral's understanding, Avram Avinu is the one who really kept Kol HaTorah Kula. Right? The other Avos, it seemed not as much to the Maral. He was not as much on board to think that all of the Avos kept the Torah in the same way as with Avram. Right, since in the case of Avram, the pasuk comes right out and says it. Okay, so we'll see that the Maral himself is, as I alluded to last week, Maral himself is going to say, okay, well, maybe the others did keep it, right? But it doesn't say it by them in the same way. So there's certainly whether the fact that the pasuk highlights it by Avram Avinu is by itself going to be considered significant in terms of understanding how it works. So the pasuk says it by Avram Avinu, and he explained a beautiful thing that he said because of the first he said two svaras, two arguments. First argument was that Avram Avinu obviously was a discoverer. Avram Avinu was the one who, without any tradition, discovered HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore, by the same token, that seichel of Avram, that intelligence of Avram that was able to discover by itself HaKadosh Baruch Hu, was also able to discover by itself Kol HaTorah Kula. And the other of us who had HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'Mesaira, they got it from Avram. So therefore, they didn't have that same natural attachment to that which was that essential truth. That's one argument which he makes. The second argument which he makes is that the Torah has a title called Torah's Chesed. And Avram Avinu is personification of Chesed. And because the Torah is known as Torah's Chesed, so therefore Avram Avinu naturally connects to the Torah as a whole, to Torah's Chesed. The flip side, however, of that is that the Torah is also known as Torah's Emes. Well, Torah's Chaim too, but the Torah's Emes, when we speak about the Midas of the Avos, you have Chesed and Gevura and Emes, right? So, or Chesed and Din Emes, right? Torah is also known as Torah's Emes, and Yaakov Avinu is Emes. So he says, yes. But as you know, and as we talked about last time, Emes is not really so compatible to the world the way we have it now. The world that we have is an Alma de Shikra, is a world which has this level of built-in falseness into it, this built-in falseness, which was why the world was so hard for Yaakov Avinu to swallow the way this world was. Why Ma'at V'royim Hayu Meishnei Chaya? Why Yaakov's perspective on the world was so on this world the way it was so dim. So he says, so for Yaakov Avinu to keep the Torah in this world because of the notion of Emes, but he wasn't in a world of Emes. The Chazal tell us, as we mentioned, that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, the Emes came before Hashem and said, how can you create Adam in this world? It's Kulei Sheker, or he's Kulei Sheker. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to some degree to dismiss the Emes in order to create it. So Teres Emes may not have its fullest strength here and now. But Chesed is what got Hashem to create the world. Ki amarti olam Chesed yibona. So from Avram's side, it did sit. It did fit. And therefore, the world of Teres Chesed, you have. The world of Teres Emes, you don't have. Now, that was the idea which he said. And we discussed it at much greater length last time, but that's what we'll say. Now I just want to say one thing which he says. But Avol b'medrash Amar b'schus Yaakov nasati Torah li Yisrael v'zeu inin acher v'ein laharich b'zeh. He says the medrash says that in the merit of Yaakov Avinu the Torah was given to the Jewish people. So on the one hand, we're saying Yaakov didn't keep the whole Torah in this world, but on the other hand, in the merit of Yaakov, we did. So he discusses this elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And again, remember the simplest idea is that Torah is called Emes. Torah is also Chesed. Chilosa v'seifa gemilas chasanim. It begins and ends with Chesed. But the Torah is certainly Emes. The problem, perhaps, with plugging in is that being able to so naturally apply that Emes to this world is a little bit of a problem. But the Torah, remember, as we said, to some degree is Eilam Haba. If you remember a few prakim ago in the Maral, we learned about how Torah equals Eilam Haba. When he spoke about the person who is Kaifer B'Torah Min HaShamayim, that he doesn't have a portion in Tchias HaMesim, it's because it's this otherworldly quality. And he's been saying that over and over again from the beginning of the Tiferes Yisrael. So therefore, yeah, in the merit of Yaakov Avinu, we got the Torah, because Yaakov Avinu was that piece of taking that which was beyond the complications and convolutions of this world and still somehow finding some way to be here. That's the way we got the Torah. Okay, so that's more or less a review of what we talked about last time. Okay, everybody okay? We had the nice piece, Eish Chayra, Eish Levana, if you remember. I just want to repeat it quickly, right? So Eish, just so it can stick. Right? The Torah, Chazal described it as being black fire on white fire. So he said the idea of it being on fire, fire on fire instead of on something, is because to disabuse us of the notion that Torah is simply just something which is to be applied to the real world. Right? Then it would be described as being on parchment. Yes, of course, we figure out how to apply Torah to the real world. And that's in the big extension of the Torah. But the Torah is, in its essence, something which preceded the world. The Torah is in its essence something which is a truth which is beyond. So therefore we describe it as fire sitting on fire, something which is not so just material, hard and fast that it's only something because it sticks to the hard surface, because it sticks to the world. And he says, what's the black on white? Because white is a color of softness and of chesed, and black on white is a color of clarity. And that's these two elements of Torah's chesed, the white, and Teres Emes, the black on white, the clarity of the contrast of those two. That's the characterization of Torah. Okay. Eitzel Yitzchak. Okay, so now that he's explained Avram Avinu's special connection to Torah, and to some degree he's also talked about Yaakov Avinu's connection to Torah, but yet non-connection of Torah to this world as it is, he has to explain, consistent with his approach here, two more things. Right? Two more things for starters. And that is that Chazal do associate Yitzchak with a specific mitzvah. And they do associate Yaakov with a specific mitzvah. Not just the mitzvah of Gid Anosha that we read about yesterday in the Torah, which the Torah obviously speaks about with Yaakov Avinu, and that we explained a couple of prakim, or last perek, a couple of weeks ago, or whatever it is, somewhere around there. It's all a blur. But there's another thing which a Chazal associate with Yaakov from yesterday's parsha. Okay, with Yitzchak, what do they associate? As we mentioned last week, Shechita. Yitzchak said to Esav, when he asked him to go get him some game, Sona keilecha tel yecha vekashtecha. And Chazal understand that the term sa, beyond meaning just carry it, take your tools, was sharpen. Sharpen your tools, because make sure that you shecht right, that you shecht correctly. So why is specifically sana keilecha? Why is that specifically the mitzvah of shechita? Why is that something which Yitzchak brings out before the Torah is given? Right? Yaakov Avinu, in yesterday's parsha, it says vayichanas penei ha'ir. Right? When he came to Shechem, vayichanas penei ha'ir. So Chazal have all kinds of drushes which make on Ve'yichanas Pnei Ha'ir. One of the drushes which Chazal make is that Yaakov Avinu came there Ben Ashmoshos as sun was setting on Erev Shabbos, and he established that as his place for Shabbos. Why? Because there's a din called Tchum Shabbos, that when you're in a certain area on Shabbos, you can't travel beyond it, even if you're walking and you're not carrying anything, but you have to pretty much stay in your place on Shabbos. You can walk within the area that's called your place miles and miles. If you're in a city and the city is your place, you can walk from one end of the city to the other because you said, I started this day in the city and I'm still in the city, right? But you can't walk from one city to the other. You can't walk, right? If you happen to, if you want to walk out to an area which is nearby, near to the city, but away from the city, then that's going to be an issue, right? Not long ago, if somebody wanted to walk from here to, you know, to Owings Mills, to what's Owings Mills, to Ner Israel, to Ner Israel, they would have to make an Eruv Tchumen in order to bridge the gap. Now, by and large, people don't do it anymore because it's so built up, you know, from one to the other. But it was not that way, even just on, you know, its own road. There was Mount Moses Lane even. There was a huge gap without homes. Now the whole thing is being built up, you know, so it's a different story. It's considered one contiguous area. But there's a din of Tchum Shabbos. So Yaakov came there, and he established himself there for Shabbos. That was his Tchum Shabbos. So these are two things that the Torah is hinting to, that they did. So look, you know, again, if you're going to take the attitude that they kept all of the Tariq mitzvahs, no. Right? But Maral is not really even necessarily taking that attitude. He's saying that, I don't know that they kept it. By Avram it says it. By them it doesn't say it. So Yitzchak kept this mitzvah and Yaakov kept that mitzvah. Why is Yitzchak keeping Shechita and Yaakov keeping Shabbos? And again, even according to version 2, we'll say, okay, maybe they did keep the mitzvah. But the Torah highlights Yitzchak's connection to Shechita. The Torah highlights Yaakov's connection to Tchum Shabbos, to Shabbos. What's the idea there? What's the idea there that we're going to that we see this, these mitzvahs specifically associated with them? So what the Maharal is going to do is he's going to draw a line of association, a specific line of association between Yitzchak and Shechita, and between Yaakov and Shabbos. Okay, that's the basic outline of what he's going to do in this next section. So what's the idea? So I'll read to you the words of the Maharal. He does not discuss this at length at all when it comes to Yitzchak and Shechita, at least over here in the Tiferes. He says, Yadua ki ha-shechita hunaita el midas hadin. It is known that Shechita, that slaughter, is associated with the midas hadin, with the midah of judgment. And that's why it was the measure of Yitzchak to keep this mitzvah, because it's associated with Midas Hadin.
Has nothing to do with being a shachet al gabim mizbeach.
Okay, good. So you say, well, I have it even. I have a direct association instead of just a conceptual association. Yitzchak lay on the mizbeach, tied down with a knife held over his throat. He was essentially destined, or at least in Avram Avinu's mind, destined for Shechita himself. So there's an association between Yitzchak and Shechita right then and there. Undeniably, that's a connection. Undeniably, that's a connection. But what the Maharal is doing over here, even though he doesn't make mention of that here at all, is that he is saying, well, beyond an event, a connection of an event, it's a conceptual connection. There's a reason why Yitzchak was designated to be Shachut, because Yitzchak is Din and Shechita is associated with Din. Okay, that's all he says. I mean, he goes on and says, so the same way Avram Avinu was connected to Kol HaTorah Kula because of his Chesed, Yitzchak was connected to Shechita because of Din. Okay. He doesn't say here how it's connected to Din. So here we have our teacher, Rabbi Hartman, who brings some counter references. He brings the Gemara in Gittin, which says, "Alecha hiragnu kol hayayim." Right? The fame, it's not such a famous Gemara. But the Gemara says over there that, "Ki alecha hiragnu kol hayayim," for you, we have been killed all the day. We accepted to be killed all of the day. So what's that referring to, says the Gemara? Right? It sounds like Mesiras Nefesh. Says the Gemara, it's Talmidei Chachamim Shemarin Hilchais Shechita Ba'atzmam. What happens is when people are learning Maseches Chulin, which discusses the laws of Shechita, so they can't resist. And sometimes, you know, they don't have a cow with them in the Beis Medrash, right? So they want to demonstrate how one cuts a neck. So what's the natural inclination is that they're going to start, I'm not going to do it, okay? But they're going to start doing a demonstration of where it is, you know, this spot on the neck, that spot on the neck, right? You know, they're saying he does it like this, or he does it like this, he does it like this, and he does it on himself. Upamim nitzav mikach, and they could get hurt. Right? They play with real. They play with loaded knives. Right? So therefore, you know, pamim nifsam mikach. It could cause them to be wounded. Now the idea is not even necessarily. Right? Again, Pashim Shadnas in the Gemara is that they'll stick it in there, that they're playing with a knife and they're trying to show how it would sit, and they could make a tragic mistake. We generally expand it even, that a person, I'm not holding a knife, that a person wouldn't even, draw their finger across it, even though there's not an actual, immediate, tangible, physical danger. And it's the same way that, for instance, it's written in the Sefer Hasidim that when people would learn Maseches Yevamos, they would fast before they learned Maseches Yevamos. And certainly when they learned Maseches Ma'ir Katan. And the reason is because Maseches Yevamos, which deals with the Yibum, the levirate marriage, so what happens? He says, okay, so if he dies without children, and then he speaks about all these cases, and one inevitably will give examples. So if you, or if I, right, and all these cases are very, very morbid cases. They're not pleasant things, and we're worried about even opening our mouth to such things. So we always say, if one, right, if you have one, right. Rav David Cohen once told me something very funny. He said that he's very careful with people. No, people who talk to him, he's very careful when the people say. So if somebody would say to him, so if you need to have treatment for this, so he would stop them and correct them. He says, if one needs to have treatment for this. So he says he was once speaking to a lady, and she was just disgusted. He was talking to her about her issues or challenges, family, this, that, or the other thing. So he says, listen. If you had 10 children, so she interrupted, she said, no, if one had 10 children. So what's the idea? So there we say that we're worried about the shechita. So what's the idea? So he says, so he brings what the Maral said in the Netzach, which is that Shechita is Bekoyach and Midas Hadin, right? Shechita is something which is done with force, with Midas Hadin, with judgment, and there's nothing which is B'Midas Hadin like Shechita, Kashir Yodua. So therefore, when he's Mara Ba'atzmai HaShechita, when he demonstrates Shechita on himself, he is inviting Din. There's a notion of inviting din. So again, he's understanding it, of course, beyond just the technical concern that the knife might slip and he's playing with knives. But the idea is, because shechita is din, and when he demonstrates something of din upon himself, he could be, heaven forbid, inviting din upon himself. That's one quote from the Maral. I'm just going to give you some quotes, and then we're going to talk about it and try to make it a little bit more tangible and real. He brings a Gur Aryeh. Right? Okay, and there's no way that anybody can do this other than Rabbi Hartman. Okay, so he says, Shechita is something which kills, which destroys. Right? So therefore, its inclination is to destruction. Okay, which is not using the term din, but it's using the term, it's dangerous. You're talking about Shechita on yourself. The person's talking about Shechita on themselves, so then they could be bringing something like that on themselves. And then he brings an amazing, beautiful, beautiful Maral, where he explains all of the Hilchas Shechita. There's several Hilchas Shechita that the Gemara lists, Shia, Derisa, Chaloda, Hagrama, Ikur, about things which have to happen right. And he explains each one of them as related to Din. Each one of them is related to Din. That din, it has to be, number one, both forceful, and it has to be cutting, like we speak about a psak din. What's a psak din? Psak means to cut. Shechita. Right? Or, right, so that's the paskin. A gzar din. Again, it's always, the term is to cut. Right? Din is cutting, which of course shechita is as well. Okay, so these are aspects of I would say, almost like indications of Shechita's connection to Din. What's the idea, what's the core idea of Shechita in some sense being connected to Din and being connected to Yitzchak? So yes, Shechita takes away life. Shechita kills, Shechita takes away life. Shechita, to some degree, is something from the outside that closes this other thing down, that stops this other thing. That's fundamentally the way we understand Din. The way we understand Din, associated with Gvura, is where somehow, right, your general ability to just do is somehow held in line, right? You went about, right, the person went about, I should say, following in the spirit of what we've been talking about, right, the person went about doing his own thing and so on and so forth, and he was freewheeling and carrying, and then one day they haul him into the courtroom. And now suddenly, all of the freedom which he had before, now he somehow has to, now he's being called on the carpet for it. That's limiting. Now, beyond that, I forget even just the courtroom. Right? Din is what limits all of our functions, right? If you didn't have to respond to something called din, so then would you keep copious and exact records of all of your charitable contributions or all of your business expenses in order to be able to put it all together? But look, you know, you're going to make your claim, you need to be able to substantiate it. Din constrains, din limits. Din limits. Din defines the limits. If a person by himself, a chesed is sort of this thing that just, you know, you give out, you give out, you give out, you do, easygoing, right? Not knowing the boundaries of din, chesed, when it comes to service of Hashem, is what's called lifni mishuras hadin, which means, well, din says this much, but I go beyond. What does that mean? I'm not just simply working between specific lines. I'm not working between specific lines, but din is to work between specific lines. Din is containment. Din is limitation. Din is cutting the person down to size. And to some degree, it may even be that din is, we might even use the term as stifling the person. Yes, din might even be described as stifling the person. You can't do everything which you feel like doing, everything which your inclination, which you would want to do, which you would have a desire to do. No, sorry. You've got to stay within the lines. That's din. That's din. To a certain degree, yes, it cuts out a little bit of the life force of the person. What we call that in English is self-control. Well, din is not necessarily self-control. Din could be control imposed from the outside, right? The judge, the police, it's control. But when we speak about it in terms of a mida that a person would develop themselves, we call it self-control, which is gevura, which is, of course, the term which is associated very directly with the avoda of Yitzchak. Yes, Avram is chesed and Yitzchak is din, but Avram is chesed and Yitzchak is as well gevura, gevura. Gevura is Ezehu Gibor, Hakovesh Es Yitzro. Who's considered the Gibor, the strong man, is the one who is able to exercise power and control over himself, that he doesn't let himself get out of bounds that way. That's Yitzchak. That's Yitzchak. And to some degree, in a sense, that is something which is expressed by Shechita. Yes, and it sounds very, very harsh and difficult for us, cutting out a life force. But yes, self-control does that to some degree. Self-control does that to some degree. Now, the life force can take you who knows where, right? By itself, it can take you who knows where. So maybe the self-control is, in fact, bringing you in line so that you will have a far better life, right? A person who is whatever, who's drawn, who's addicted to different kinds of substances, and his nature now at this point in time, for whatever reason, will have him to partake of those substances. So would you say that the Gevura is, in the broadest sense, denying him of life? Of course not. The Gevura is giving him life. But in the narrow sense, right, as he's sitting there and aching for that fix, aching for that other thing, yes, the Gevura is denying him life. The Gevura is having him suppress some part of his life force. And in a sense, yes, that we associate broadly with Shechita. That we associate specifically with Yitzchak. And Akedas Yitzchak. Akedas Yitzchak was Yitzchak's submission to Avram Avinu. And it's a complicated connection, his submission to Avram Avinu. On one hand, his submission to Avram Avinu is done by Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu doesn't even tell him what's going on. He brings him, Hashem gives Avram the mitzvah, Avram Avinu brings him onto the mountain, and Avram Avinu, and Yitzchak says, what's going on? What's going to be with this? And simple pshat in the pasuk, Avram Avinu is not telling Yitzchak anything. And then Avram ties Yitzchak down onto the mizbeach and takes the knife and holds it over his neck. Right? So Avram Avinu imposes this on Yitzchak. On the other hand, we also have Chazal that insert into that whole story that Yitzchak said, oh, that's what you want to do? And Yitzchak says, please tie me down. I'm afraid that if you don't tie me down, I might move because I'll panic. You know, I'm only human, right? And with the knife over my neck, I might move and the shechita might not turn out kosher, right? So do me a favor, tie me down. So what happens is that on the one hand, Avram Avinu is doing this to Yitzchak. On the other hand, Chazal see that Yitzchak to some degree participates. Chazal aren't doing that because they're trying to be politically correct and not wanted to see that, like, Avram Avinu was being so terrible that he was throwing Yitzchak down onto the mat and tying him down and cutting his neck. And they're not even doing it just because they want to make Yitzchak look like a hero. They're doing it, I think, well, I'm not going to tell you they're doing it this is exactly what happened. I don't know, right? Maybe, right? Very, very much. I don't mean to in any way chas v'shalom be a skeptic. You have to understand the shyness of Chazal. Sometimes they're describing. But what emerges from Yitzchak from this is certainly a Yitzchak who is the practitioner of Gevura long after those ropes are untied, long after Yaakov has put the knife back into the scabbard, after using it on the ram instead of on Yitzchak. Yitzchak is still the personification of Gevura, which means that at some point in this Akedah, he embraced the Shechita, he embraced the self-control, and it would carry with him for the rest of his life. That's Yitzchak. That's Yitzchak and Din. That's the idea of Din. So says the Gemara, like the animal, you're just going to have it as it is. Right? When you shecht an animal, what's the idea that you shecht an animal before you eat it? Why do you think you shecht an animal before you eat it?
Can't eat it alive.
You can't eat it alive. So there are all kinds of other things that you can do.
You can shoot it.
You can shoot it, right? I mean, people generally don't eat live things, so maybe they tear off Eber Menachai. But that's not a myth. That's a Eber Menachai is for Bnei Noach. Right, so what's the idea of shechita, and the shechita is, again, it's specifically for things that are earth based, that are animals, right? Fish don't have shechita, right? It's not the same thing. And the idea of shechita seems very much to be that you're taking whenever a human being deals with an animal, you need to understand that we're dealing with the animal without. And excuse me, we're dealing with the animal within. Okay? I don't know if any of you were at Mark Wiener last night, right? But he was talking. Part of his routine was as he had learned about the animal soul and the human soul, and he did a routine about his animal soul and his human soul having an argument between Mark and Moshe. It was very funny. But the it's a language which is used by the Rishonim, of the nefesh habahamis, right, of the animal soul of the person versus the neshama eloi versus the higher soul of the person. But in any case, everybody understands that we have biology that's common by and large, not perfectly, but common by and large with the animal kingdom, but yet we're supposed to be something different. And this, as we've discussed many times in many different frameworks, is the existential issue of every person. Right? That's why the sin of the Eitz Hadas revolves around the snake talking to Chava, right? Communication between man and animal. Why Adam Arishon is even finally Chava is he first checks out all the animals, but then, no, they're not me. I have to find somebody who's like me. He has to have a Chava, he has to have a fellow person. Korbanos, everything which we do with animals is not just we're doing it with that animal over there, we're also doing it with trying to how we're dealing with it ourselves. We worry about our partaking of the animal because of what it means about that part of ourselves. When we go and we take an animal, and with a very specifically prescribed formula, we do something to it in the process of killing it and preparing it to eat it, that is doing it specifically in this way, right? In order to then partake of this animal, what we're doing is we're demonstrating in a very obvious, so to speak, almost illustrative way, the human being trying to not be controlled by the animal part, but indeed taking control of it. I'm only going to partake of the animal. I'm only going to be involving my normal human aspects in this very specific and defined way. This very specific and defined way. In a certain sense, just like we understand, and we discussed a couple few weeks ago when we were talking about Bris Milah, just like we understand that there's this fundamental drive that a person has that would be considered perhaps as the quintessential Yetzer Rava person, which is in the realm of the person's sexuality. And there, HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes and says, okay, we're going to make the sign of a Jew a mitzvah which is imposed right then and there. Right? Why? Because we're going to the crux of the challenge, and we're saying, let's bring mitzvah there. Let's bring mitzvah there. Shechita, to eat an animal, is this way. It's in a sense this expression of control, of self-control. There's a physical world with all of its things, but din is there to somehow hold it in line. And that's Gvuras Yitzchak. Huh? Why is it specifically
a bow and arrow?
So that the mysteries of exactly why Shechita, I can't tell you. I can't explain it to you. I can't explain it to you. I don't know.
Does it work if you go to 7 Mile Market? We don't see the Shechita anymore.
I know that I had this animal. When I'm partaking of this animal, it's only this animal that's been done kasher tziva, right? Right? Kasher tzivi sicha. That's where the Gemara learns it from. You know that? It doesn't say anywhere in the Torah that you have to shecht an animal before you eat it. All it says is kasher tzivi sicha, like I commanded you. Right? There's an idea here of, right, controlling the animal. I think that's the idea. That's the fundamental idea. And that's Gevura. And that's Yitzchak. That's Yitzchak. That's Yitzchak. There's much more to talk about it with Yitzchak. Right? That's I think, you know, the idea why Yitzchak has to eat. Why Yitzchak has a love for Esav when he eats. Why Yitzchak has to eat before he gives the brachas with love. Right, is because Yitzchak is Gevura, he's self-control. With self-control, you might make sure that you eat broccoli every day, but that doesn't mean that you love broccoli. The opposite. Despite the fact that I don't love it, I'm going to eat it anyway. The whole issue with brachas is that brachas have to be given be'ava, with love. Right, the Ramban explains, why didn't Rivka, who had a nevuah from Hashem, that Yaakov was going to be greater than Esav, why didn't Rivka just go and tell Yitzchak, look, I know you love him, but I'm sorry, I have a nevuah, you got to give it to Yaakov. You know what the Ramban's answer is? It's an amazing answer. He says, she could have done that. And then Yitzchak would have intellectually known, like he knew so many other things intellectually, I need to give it to Yaakov, and maybe dutifully he would have given it to Yaakov. But that's not the way brachas work. Brachos work be'ava. The one mitzvah which we say, asher kiddushanu, blank, 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 be'ava is birchas kayanim. Right? You don't say asher kiddushanu, besides his own ladlik ner shalchanukah be'ava, even though you're supposed to serve it be'ava, right? But a kayan who gives a bracha has to say, you commanded us to bless Klal Yisrael be'ava. Because a bracha is only communicated with ava. So you can tell me from today till tomorrow, I need to give it to Yaakov. That's not going to make me love him. It's not going to make me love it. Right? So that's the idea. Gvura doesn't create love. Gvura is suppressing that which you love. So all those ideas, wherever we talk about what Yitzchak loved, is not necessarily something great and grand. Because farkert. Since Yitzchak is the opposite, Yitzchak is Gvura, he's control. So what he naturally loves may not be the most, you know, perfect, fantastic, idealistic. But the kunz is nevertheless control to the extent that there that it's there, that ability to control. Okay, so that's Yitzchak and Shechita.
How do you get the Shechita's Rasha? Esav was not exactly the. You would think he would sense that.
How he would rely on Esav's Shechita?
Yeah.
The truth is, originally he asked for fish. Just kidding. it goes into the whole idea of what Yitzchak thought Esav was, and did he feed him Nevela? I don't know that he fed him Nevela. I don't know that he didn't actually follow through with Yitzchak's instruction in that regard.
He himself was a Russian, you would think he would sense the Ruchnius title. All right.
Yaakov and Shabbos. So here the Maral again, to some degree, to me, he's a little lengthier, but to me also, like, maybe I hear a little bit short, and it's a fascinating thing here. What's the idea? Because Chazal tell us, it's a famous thing, the Pasuk says in Yeshaya, in Toshiv Mishabbos Raglecha, right? If on Shabbos you rest your feet, Krasel Shabbos Einig, right? And you declare the Shabbos an Einig, V'chalticha nachlas Yaakov Avicha, I promise you that you will have the portion of Yaakov Avinu. The Gemara says in Shabbos, you see from this Pasuk, that a person who is ma'aneg es ha-Shabbos karoy, a person who gives proper aneg Shabbos, so then he's given a portion without mitzorim, without boundaries, without limits, an unlimited portion. Why? Because that was what was unique about Yaakov Avinu. Avram was told, walk this land, it's yours. Yitzchak was told, I'm going to give you the land that I gave to Avram. Yaakov, Hashem said to him in the beginning of Ayetze, I'm going to give you this land, but you're going to go ufaratzta, you're going to expand in all directions. Your land really doesn't have boundaries. Yaakov, Hashem tells him as he's leaving Eretz Yisrael, go, I'm with you all the way. I'm going to keep going with you. Right? The ability to expand beyond boundaries. So we say, a person who enjoys the Shabbos properly, so we say we give him nachla b'li mitzarim. We give him a portion without boundaries. Right? Why? Because it says we give him the portion of Yaakov, and Yaakov's portion is without boundaries. But of course, that's not just a kunz of saying we give him a portion without boundaries, we associate with Yaakov. Evidently, proper delight in Shabbos is Yaakov. Proper delight in Shabbos is associated with Yaakov. So from there, we have a raya, we have a proof that Yaakov is associated with Shabbos. So therefore, over here also, the Torah tells us about Yaakov Avinu keeping Shabbos. That's what the Maral says. And that's a very, very real, very real connection. He goes on and he says that the idea is, it's mavur, to explain it more. This is just drawing the line. To explain it more, because it says, v'karasa l'shabbos oineg ulikdash Hashem mechubad. You call the Shabbos a delight, and that which is sanctified by Hashem, you call it mechubad. And Yaakov Avinu, we know, is associated with Kedusha, with sanctity, of all the others. The third bracha of the Shemoneh Esrei, which is the bracha of Yaakov, just like the first bracha is the bracha of Avram, Magen Avram, and the second bracha is the bracha of Yitzchak, the bracha of Gevura, and Tchias HaMeisim. The third bracha is the bracha of Yaakov. That's what we learn from the Arizal. And the third bracha is bracha of Kedusha. And we say Shabbos is Shabbos Kodesh, right? Like it's Kedosh Hashem. Shabbos is sacred, and Yaakov, you know, to some degree is sacred. So therefore we have this association. Now, we could talk a lot about this. We're going to talk a little bit about this. Yeah.
So you say unlimited boundaries. Unlimited boundaries of what? Boundaries of what? Of delight for the Shabbos? Boundaries of service?
This is the reward for one who has really delights in the Shabbos. So his reward is going to be a portion that will know no limits.
But a portion of what?
World to come, maybe even to some degree like this world, right? Yaakov Avinu was told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, you can take this wherever you go. Uferat the Yom of Akeima. You're not limited to being here in Eretz Yisrael, to having only the presence of Hashem here in Eretz Yisrael. You will have it wherever you go, in every direction. So Yaakov wasn't held within any kind of limits. So here, the person is given unlimited capacity. Person given unlimited capacity. We never know exactly how, because we don't see rewards coming immediately, we don't know exactly how to translate, but ultimately it's tapping into this potential of unlimited reward. So what does it all mean? What's the association of Yaakov to Shabbos? Okay, so of course, Shabbos is Vayikadesh of Sov. Shabbos introduces into the world the element of Kedusha, of sanctity, and of a different kind, right? Instead of building just the physical world, we're talking about some other kind of building that takes place on Shabbos. And that's Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu was not so much into the building of this world. Instead, he was much more of another world. And therefore, to some degree, in that sense, he could be seen as being very deeply associated with Shabbos. Nachla b'lim etzarim. Right? By the way, we have it in the Zmiris, we say this week. Nachlas Yaakov Yirush b'lim etzarim nachla. In Mayedidus, if you sing Mayedidus. Right? Nachlas Yaakov Yirush, the person who keeps the Shabbos will inherit the portion of Yaakov b'li mitzarim nachla. Without boundaries is his portion. Right? So we speak about that. That's the aspect of lis anig b'sanugim b'avurim uslova dogim, right? To enjoy the tanugim of Shabbos. So what's the, what is it? Right? So a couple of thoughts. One thought is that, what does it mean when HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Yaakov, you can go wherever you want? Right? Yitzchak never left Eretz Yisrael. Yaakov Avinu, right, 77 years into his life, 63 years into his life actually, his mother says, go leave. Right? And we always point this out. It's such an interesting thing. I just talking about a couple of weeks ago in Parshas Vayetze. You know, Rivka says, Esau wants to kill him. She says to Yaakov, Esau wants to kill you. You've got to get out of here. You've got to go to Laban. There's only one problem, Rivka says to herself. He's got a father. And I can't just send him off to Laban. I've got to get his father to send him off to Laban. So this is the plan. The plan is, I'm going to go to his father. And I'm going to say, I can't stand the women around here in Canaan. I want him to marry somebody from home. I just don't want, I'm not even going to have to say that. I'm just going to say, I don't want him to marry somebody from here. So what's going to happen? So then the father's going to say, Yaakov, you need to go to Laban to get married, right? And it works like a charm, right? She's such a good manipulator, right? She goes and she says to Yitzchak, I can't stand these women over here. Yitzchak calls in Yaakov, he says, go to Laban. Now, if it was me, I would think that this was a terrible plan. Why? Because Yitzchak also wasn't supposed to marry a girl from Canaan. He also wasn't supposed to. So what did his father do? His father sent somebody to go get him a wife. Yeah. Right? Sent him to go get a wife. So Rivka says to Yaakov, I don't want him to marry somebody from here. Well, Yitzchak, I don't want him to marry somebody from here. So what should she expect Yitzchak to respond? Oh, good. Okay, we'll go find somebody. Right? We'll you know, maybe there's a Choron website.
I was
going to leave it. Right? Saw you at Choron. right? But why did she assume that he would send him away? So this understanding that, Yaakov could go anywhere, Yaakov has no boundaries, is evidently, it's inherent. You know, it's not just, Yitzchak was an Eilat Tmima, so he had this thing, he was a Korban, so he had to stay here in Eretz Yisrael. Right? But Yaakov didn't have that specific condition to go. It was like, because, nobody's supposed to generally just leave Eretz Yisrael, right? And if there's another option, why shouldn't he? Right? But Yaakov somehow, it really didn't make a difference. Evidently, it was like, it didn't make a difference, which was what Hashem was going to say, to Avram, to Yitzchak, it made a difference. To you, it doesn't make a difference. Right? To you, Ufaratzta, you go wherever you want. Now I'm going to give you this land. He says, you're going to come back here. You're going to come back here eventually. But to you, somehow, it's not a difference. And the way, to some degree, you have to understand that is that Avram and Yitzchak are more connected to the ground. You know, the way we illustrate, and we talked about in the Shir, in the Parshir, was that what's the real difference for you and I between living here and living in Eretz Yisrael? I'm not talking about spiritual. I'm talking about practical, Torah practical. But not. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about, Eretz Yisrael, it's so holy, it's so special. Practical is there's an area called mitzvahs hatluyas ba'aretz. Mitzvahs which are based on the land. Agricultural mitzvahs. Mm-hmm. Right? When you're into the earth, when you're a farmer, your life is fundamentally different in Eretz Yisrael or in Chutz La'aretz. Right? Yaakov Avinu. Yitzchak gave him a bracha. You should have the dew of the heavens, the fat of the land, which is agriculture, and Yaakov couldn't even take it. He says at the beginning of Vayishlach that we read yesterday, he says to Esav, don't worry, I didn't get the brachas. I have sheep, I have cattle, I have slaves, I have all that stuff. But dew of the heavens, fat of the land, I don't have. Farming, nothing to do with me. So to him, does it make a big difference if he's in Eretz Yisrael or not in Eretz Yisrael? Right? In a certain way, again, of course it makes a difference. Right? But in a certain way, you see that that level of connection, of groundedness, it's different. It's different between them. Yitzchak, who's a karban, Yitzchak, who has this very earthy side to him that he controls, but the earth that he's at is going to make a huge difference. Yaakovinu's kadosh. He's detached. He's removed. So for him, the transition, leaving is different. It's different. As a result of that, it's different. As a result of that, it's going to be different for Yaakovinu. And to some degree, that's Shabbos. Shabbos is the time when you stop working the ground. Right? You know, right? What does the Pasuk say about Shabbos? It even connects it to the ground. Bechorish uvakotzir tishbois. Right? To the extent that we even learn out Hilchas Shmita from Hilchas Shabbos, from Bechorish uvakotzir tishbois, which is the stopping of the agricultural work. Right, it's how earth connected you are that we have to somehow disconnect from Shabbos, which is what Shemitah is. Don't get too wrapped up in the earth, right? We have to somehow pull you back from the earth a little bit. That was Yaakov Avinu's specialty. Now, yes, I'm sorry, somebody had a question. Yeah.
Just to go back, did Yitzchak and Rivka, or one of the two, know about the Sufratza?
That's what I'm saying. Even before Hashem said it, it was understood that for Yaakov it wasn't. That was Yaakov. It wasn't. The ground doesn't make a difference. It wasn't as grounded. So that's the difference. Now I just want to point out to you though a delicious irony. It's a mamish like such a delicious irony. I want to, Rabbi Hartman, where are you over here? You know, like there's got to be a morale on this someplace, but I don't know if there's any morale on it. It's just like such an obvious, delicious irony. The pasuk which speaks of Nachla, the Limitzarim, starts Im Toshiv Mishabbos Raglecha, which is that you don't walk like you do during the week. The halacha of Shabbos that we see Yaakov observing is Tchum Shabbos. What's the din of Tchum Shabbos? Is staying within a specific boundary.
Which is the opposite.
And as a result, you get a portion without boundaries. What does that mean?
That's the synthesis of Avram and Yitzchak.
Yeah, what do you mean?
Because Yitzchak is grew within boundaries, and Avram was without boundaries, and you have take that together, and you're able to fuse that. By staying within boundaries, you're able to then go out, so it's like an hourglass.
Wow. Chesed is without boundaries. Yitzchak is with boundaries.
So
Avraham, Yaakov Avinu comes together, and by staying within boundaries on Shabbos, he merits to go burst through the boundaries. Very beautiful thing. I have to think about it. Yeah.
It seems to also be the Chayrut and Charut link, that by locking yourself down in some way, you end up really freeing yourself.
Okay. Good. Good.
You have a metaphor in physics. Fusion.
Yeah.
By pushing the atoms together, they eventually explode and go out.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing.
Okay. Very nice.
The energy.
Very, very nice. Very, very nice. You know, I was thinking a little bit differently you know, there's a Chazal tell us that when we refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as Hamokim, Hashem is called Hamokim, the place. So we say, what's the idea? Because everything else exists within a place. Everything has its place. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not exist within a place. Everything exists within Him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Mekayim Shel Olam. Right? Hashem is the place within which the world resides. You know, it's like the same as the name Havaya. The name Havaya, the name that we don't pronounce of Hashem. What's that name? The name is Hoyo Hoyaviyehi. Was, is, will be. Which means that you can't pigeonhole Hashem into any specific point in time. Mm-hmm. Just like Hashem is the place within which everything else exists, Hashem is also, he's not limited within a certain time. Time exists within him, so to speak. That's the Havaya, that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who's L'malami Azman, beyond time. So, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Makam of the world. Everything that exists in the world, to some degree, exists within a Makam, within a place. Within a place. A person is supposed to be Kaveya Makam L'Tfilasai. You ever think about this? This is like, this is like a great question. It's like a riddle, you know. You're sitting at a bar mitzvah, like turn to the person next to you and ask them this question. Okay? What's the question? It says in the Mishnah, in more than one place, in Brachas and Avos, it says you should not make your tefillos keva. You should not make your tefillos fixed. Tefillos shouldn't be fixed. They should be spontaneous. They should be creative. They should be, you should be mechadish badover. You know, it shouldn't be rote routine. Oh, here it is, I got to daven again, right? You're not supposed to make your tefillos keva. That's one thing Chazal tells us. You know what another thing Chazal tells us? They tell us you should be koveya, a place to daven. You should daven in a fixed routine place. So if you're not supposed to have a fixed prayer, why should the place where you pray be fixed? It would seem that prayer is anathema to anything fixed, or fixed is anathema to prayer. So why is it that when it comes to the place that you daven, we say that it should be fixed?
It's only in the Masoret, because the Ramban and the Rambam.
Yeah.
The Ramban says it's tefillah, the, you know, spontaneous stuff, but the Rambam, I think, says, you know, the basic stuff of what Chazal.
Every day you should daven.
Yeah. So that's,
but everybody agrees to kaveh makom l'tefillasai.
It's not for the Ramban type of tefillah.
Okay. For the Ramban type of tefillah, it shouldn't be. For Eitz Tzor, it shouldn't be.
Yeah,
only for a tefillah kavua. Right? He's alluding, the Rambam holds to daven every day, no matter what, is a deiraisa. The Ramban says it's not a deiraisa, it's not a Torah commandment. The Torah commandment is when you really need something, you daven to Hashem. So the kaveh makam l'tefillah is for the ordered tefillah. But the Mishnayis, when they say about atasa tefillos chakva, is about shachris min chamarev.
Yeah.
That's what it's about. I think it's an irony that has to be that has to be understood, that has to be addressed. So, you know, I don't know. It seems to me that the idea is that the fact that you have a fixed place is rachamim. What is the language of the Mishnah? Al tasa tefilos chakva ela rachamim v'tachanunim lifnei hamokim. In other words, it's part of this realization that you exist within a specific. Right? You're not, HaKadosh Baruch Hu contains everything, and you're contained to some degree within him, within the place. If you're all over the place, then you don't necessarily have that feeling of the grandeur of standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? Mim kaimai hu yifen berachamim v'yachayin amam yachadim shemai. From his place, that's where the rachmim comes. That's where the chanina comes, right? It's to have a specific where you daven in a specific place. It's sort of like we would say in English, that you know your place. So there's such a thing called kaveh amokim l'tfilasai. Shabbos, there's an idea of kaveh amokim l'shabbatai. That's the din of tchumim, is that on Shabbos, you're supposed to be in a specific place. Everybody's supposed to observe. Now, it doesn't mean you have to be in the same place every single Shabbos. But for this Shabbos, you're supposed to be in a specific place. Now, I think to some degree that idea is because, whereas normally during the week you're out there and you're going and you're doing things, you're exercising your creative ability to go and to break through, on Shabbos you don't. You recognize that Hashem created the world. You recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. That applies to Yaakov Avinu also. The thing is that when Yaakov Avinu stops resting, when he recognizes that he exists within the world of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then suddenly he's able to, after Shabbos, go any place. Any place, and take HaKadosh Baruch Hu with him. A regular person, he finishes resting on Shabbos, he's still going to have to go within his parameters. He doesn't have Tchum Shabbos, but he has Tchumen all the time. He's always going to be limited. So, I don't know, perhaps that's part of the idea. It's a little vague, needs a little more clarity, a little more understanding.
Ruchnius has no boundary, though, because he's containing himself that's, within a Ruchnius thing.
That's why Yaakov fundamentally has no boundaries. But even
I think also that on Shabbos, to be in a place at a certain time to talk about our body, our animal body, which has limitations, which should be limited. Without, you know, when we daven, that's our neshama working, which should not have any limitations or boundaries, which plays into what we were talking about before.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Nice.
I think we're missing the fact that the tefillah was set, though. Shemona Esrei is set. It's kept. How do we
deal with the fact that Anshei Knesset Gedolah fixed it all together?
Right.
Yeah. But we're supposed to somehow fight that. When the Mishnah tells us, don't make your tefillah keva, it's that even though Chazal came along and they had to establish a fixed form of tefillah and fixed times for tefillah and so on and so forth, but you're not supposed to. Right, so you have a fixed formula of tefillah. You could say Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Yisrael, or you could say Baruch Atah Hashem. You could say it with expression, like they told you in the second grade play. You know, like you got to don't just read it. You know, you got to say it with expression. That's different. Then it means it's not keva. It's not just a rote thing. You know that you're doing. It's something which is real, which is personal and specific. And it's the same thing. More even says about times of tefillah. Right, who one doesn't make tefillah kava is that he chooses just the right times. It's not just whatever. Do mechama. So this is idea. There's a whole other piece in the Maral here we didn't get into. But no. Yeah. Yeah. I have to stop.
I once heard. I think you probably heard this too. So help me out. Who said it? But there was. Oh no, I don't know. I think it was Rav Putner or someone else who said that he reached a level. I think we heard this from Lipsky. That he reached a level that when he davened. He didn't have like chedushim in his davening, and that was like a very high madriga for him. I mean, he was able to stay completely in the keva because I guess his mind was always coming up with incredible chedushim. It seems to be like I'm stuck with. You remember what I'm talking about?
No.
we were learning. It was Rabbi Yerucham actually. I'm stuck with: is a person supposed to like? There's an idea you can add in your own tefillos by you know certain areas in the davening. And then there's the idea that what you just said, you could have more kavana when you put certain things in, when you can have smart. What's a person supposed to truly be doing? Are they supposed to have their mind completely set on those words?
Does the person have to escape to different words in order to be tachlunim, or in order that it shouldn't be kavua? No. But I live with this thing that I say over recently from the Gra, from the Hagdama, the Siddur Hagra, where he says, in order... what's the Eitzah which he got in order to be able to be Mechavan and Tefillah, he got from Rav Nosson, the famous Rav Nosson, who was the Abbez Nev Yafo, one of the most central figures in understanding of Hilchot Shemitah. He says, what was the thing is a new insight. When you have a new insight into what you're saying in the Tefillah, then that'll vitalize your Tefillah. It brings a life to your tefillah. So that doesn't mean that you're saying something that is new in terms of new words, but it is that you're saying something new, because those words are completely, now they're new to you, they're different to you. What you're saying is something else. The Madrega, yeah, would be Anshei Knesset Gedolah wrote a great script, and a person who can avoid becoming fixed into that it's great. Now, I wouldn't say to the exclusion of the person then saying his own words. I don't know. I'm not familiar with this story, but certainly that the place to find chiddush is not only in your own words. Okay. Good morning.